The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
And this is episode 105.
No Mary. No, so Mary. Sad.
So sad again. And no guest host.
No.
We need to get better at finding guest hosts.
Yeah, well, probably part of it would involve just like asking somebody, probably.
We should have whoever's going to be gone has to find their replacement. That's what we should do.
I like it. Because I'm never gone.
All right. So this week, I decided to put everything in the rack. And you guys can just see this part of the rack, but below here is, or for YouTube people, below is where everything is at. So I've got a little shelf here that has the mixer on it. And here, I'll take a picture with my phone and put it on our Google Plus channel. But,
If you get in party mode, it'll auto-post.
Yeah, that's what my plan is. And then I have the compressor, a power strip, and then I have a couple of Cisco routers and switches that I'm also putting into the rack. And other than that, I on my phone, I looked up a GPG key ring, and there's one called KPG, and it works.
That's
with
KDE's GPG ring.
No, I'm sorry, it was APG. That's what it is. I don't know why I said K. The reason I said K is because the mail client, the default mail client doesn't work with GPG keys. So there's one called K9 mail. So I set that up, and I just haven't imported my keys yet to it. So it's not all the way set up yet. But other than that, I don't know. It's been a nice lightweight week at work. Not too much work, but enough to keep me busy. What about you, Matt?
Work was okay. We're at a pause period in the move, so we didn't move any servers this week. Well, last Sunday we moved servers. So I guess we did move some this week. But other than that, nothing big. We got one guy at work that just keeps making some errors every time he works. He messes something up.
Oh, no.
And then somebody has to fix it. So I don't know. Talked a little bit about my move into monitoring, and that's on track for November 1st.
Cool.
So that's it. Watching a lot of Bad Cop videos on YouTube.
That always makes me laugh, watching Bad Cop videos. Like you have nothing else to do.
Yep.
You should volunteer at the rec center or something.
No, I should get a video camera and go record police. That's what I should do.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
We had a release candidate on Sunday, the 6th of October, 2013, at 14:21 Pacific Daylight Time. Linus Torvalds released kernel 3.12-RC4, and here's what he had to say about it. RC4 has more new commits than RC3, which doesn't make me feel all warm and fuzzy, but nothing major really stands out. More file system up fates, sick, than normal at this stage. Perhaps, but I suspect that that is just happenstance. We have SIFS, XFS, ButterFS, Fuse, and NILFS fixes here. There's the usual driver updates too, mainly net and target this time around, along with some generic networking changes too, and some architectural updates, ARM, Power, S Plus Core, AVR32, but nothing scary, so go out and test. So that puts mainline at 3.12-RC4. And now for our stable updates. On Saturday, the 5th of October, 2013, at 8:47 Pacific Daylight Time, Bitcoin released kernel 3.0.99, with 15 files changed, 118 lines inserted, and 40 lines deleted. He also has this note. Note, the 3.0.x kernel series will be moving to end of life soon, within a few weeks. Please move anything that is relying on this kernel version to the other long-term kernel releases, 3.4 or 3.10, as soon as possible. If anyone has any questions about this, please let me know. And then, on Saturday, the 5th of October, 2013, at 8:48 Pacific Daylight Time, GridCorp released kernel 3.4.65, with 20 files changed, 126 lines inserted, and 116 lines deleted. Also on Saturday, the 5th of October, 2013, at 8:48 Greg Kortman released kernel 3.10.15, with 69 files changed, 422 lines inserted, and 210 lines deleted. Then, on Saturday, October 5th, 2013, at 8:49 Pacific Daylight Time, Greg Kortman released kernel 3.11.4, with 68 files changed, 444 lines inserted, and 263 lines deleted. Our kernel developer quote of the week comes from Greg Crow Hartman. What's the term for the feeling you get when looking at code and wondering, who in the hell wrote this crap? It's all messed up, needs to be fixed. How is it even working in the first place? So you run git blame and realize it was yourself over a decade ago. Then, wondering if you can blame someone else for not fixing it up since then, you run scripts get maintainer.pl and realize that you are the maintainer for it as well. Time to just back away from the keyboard and forget I ever even opened those files. And that's the kernel update.
Very cool. That's funny. Forget I ever even opened those files.
Yep. Back away from the keyboard.
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
I don't know that I go back far enough. Where do we start there, sir?
We had Sparky Linux last week,
didn't we?
And FreeBSD, and Red Hat, and Nextar. So Magia was development. So the first one is Point Linux.
All right.
On 10.6, we have Point Linux 2.2, which is a desktop distribution based on Debian Stable with the Mate desktop.
Yep, this minor release brings some notable changes and prepares Point Linux for the next big release. Point Linux version numbering policy has been changed. This 13.04.x release is renumbered to 2.x. The changes in the distribution were that Firefox 24, Thunderbird 24, LibreOffice 4.1, KVM QAMU Spice support, fast user switching has been enabled.
Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome.
All right, on the 7th, we have a BSD release, which is PCBSD 9.2. And then...
Drew Levine has announced the release of PCBSD 9.2, an updated version of the project's desktop operating system based on FreeBSD. The PCBSD 9.2 release images are now available for download. The highlights are that it's based on FreeBSD 9.2 release, bootable ZFS boot environments using Grub2. Any new ZFS boot environments created via the bedm command will be added to the bootloader and available at boot time. So moving on.
Cool. On the 8th, we have Korora 19.1, which is a updated build of the project's Fedora-based distribution with the choice of GNOME or KDE desktop. And now it's available in Mate and Cinnamon.
Ooh, Mate and Cinnamon. Even though we did have a listener call in and say that you were right with that, it's still Mate to me.
That's right. That's fine. We have another distribution release that's Sparky Linux. I know we talked about it last week, but Sparky 3.1 with E17, Mate, and Razer QT. And as we talked about before, it's a Debian-based distro with live CDs for three popular lightweight distribution or desktops. And how is it that Red Hat, was it 6.5 was released last week?
No.
Yeah, or was it 6.4?
No.
Oh, it was 5.10 was released.
5.10. Because they have two current releases.
I see. So they have the 5 series that they keep up, and then they have the 6 series, which is the newer release. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's going to be in beta. So 6.5 is in beta right now. And then we have Zeven OS 3.3 Neptune Edition, which is also a Debian-based distro with KDE 4.11.2. And many other applications in their latest versions.
Yep. The Neptune team is proud to announce the release of Neptune 3.3. This release features the Linux kernel 3.10.12, exclusively meant to run on 64-bit CPUs. The KDE Plasma desktop ships with version 4.11.2. Chromium was updated to version 29, VLC to 2.1, and LibreOffice to 4.1.2.
All right. And then the last one on the list today is Watts OS R7.5.
Didn't we used to run that on our recording PC?
Yeah. Yeah, when we first started up, we had a PC that did all of our recording, or laptop, and that was Watts OS. It's a Ubuntu-based with LXDE or Mate or, what is it, Peak WM? P-E-K-W-M?
Never heard of that one.
Yeah, me neither. The one we were running was the LXDE version.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
All right, so at number 5, we have PC Linux OS with 1363.
And trending down.
And number 4, we have Debian.
Debian.
Debian with 1458.
And trending down.
And the number 3 spot is Ubuntu with 1965.
And trending down.
Oh, no. And number 2 spot.
Oh, no.
It's Magia with...
Here we go again.
2608.
And trending up.
But still in the number 1 spot is Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With 3268.
And trending up.
Yeah. So, what's next? Mary's not here, so we're not going to be doing any kind of distro reviews.
Nope.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
The news, I've got two I want to talk about.
All right.
Google will now pay up to $3,133.70, I don't know how they arrived at that number, for your open source software patch. The new program applies to a collection of open source projects that serve as the Internet's fundamental infrastructure. They include the popular domain name server Bind, the cryptographic library OpenSSL, and the remote login software OpenSSH. Google says it expects to expand the program to web and mail servers in the coming weeks. Once you've submitted your patch to the project managers and they've incorporated the fix, you can then tell Google about your contribution, at which point Zalewski and 7 others will review the code and decide on a reward. So they're going to, all you got to do is make a contribution to any of those projects, get it accepted, then submit the patch to them. They'll make some kind of determine on how significant it was to the project and reward you anywhere between $500 and $3,133.70.
All right. Yeah, that's so, kind of a strange...
yeah, I don't know how they got that number. I was thinking Leet is in there, but so I'm not sure if it's 3,000 Leet, you know?
Yeah.
So that might be how they arrived at that.
Elite?
Elite. There you go. I didn't get the Elite part. I just got the Leet part, but yes. That is probably how they arrived at it. Elite.
Cool.
And then next up, your car is about to go open source. An IVI is the black box that powers a car's audio and entertainment systems, as well as hands-free phone service and satellite navigation systems. Most IVIs today have touchscreens and can be voice-activated, but many car buyers pass up those options. Today, automakers are having a hard time getting their customers to buy informatic systems because they only can do 10% of what a mobile phone can do, said Rudy Serif, who leads the automotive grade Linux work group for the Linux Foundation. The main reason for the limited functionality of most IVIs is that car manufacturers use proprietary software developed by third-party suppliers to power their infotainment systems, meaning car-based apps are also proprietary. If they just went open source and used Android, they would have a plethora of applications available.
So. Yeah.
So it's good to see that they're finally catching on to that fact and getting away from this proprietary crap. So that's the stories I have, Tony.
You know, I was listening to a couple podcasts and they were talking about the Internet Explorer exploit. Did you see that?
I did not.
I think it's a couple weeks old now. It was just after OLF. And there's a way that there's a DLL for Internet Explorer. Like, this doesn't happen if you're using Chrome or Firefox. But there's a DLL that has this, you could run the Metasploit against.
Yeah.
And that person then creates a proxy that whenever the hacker is on their computer, they can go to the same website, and it goes through your computer, and then they're seeing everything you're seeing. Or they're interacting as if it's you. So then they can get into your email, or they can get into your bank, or they can do whatever. As long as you're authenticated into that website, then they're getting in there too. So that's pretty scary.
Hey,
that is
not a bug. That is the NSA's back door that Microsoft allowed into Internet Explorer.
Well, you know, Microsoft hasn't patched it yet.
Because it's the back door that the NSA paid for.
That's
Internet
gotta
Explorer.
Be it. Yeah, that's got to be it. So let's see. I know I upgraded my. I know it's not news, but I upgraded my own cloud instance, and it broke my news feed reader. I have to go through and put all my feeds back in because I didn't back them up.
Good thing you use an RSS reader there, Tony.
Yeah. anyways, but I switched over from. Or I did the upgrade first and then broke it. And then I was doing some reading, and they're saying, well, you shouldn't be using SQLite anyways. And because I was a one-person instance running on this, so I thought, oh, why not, you know? Anyway, so I installed my SQL and switched
over to... MariaDB?
No, I did my SQL. I wanted to make sure it worked. I didn't want to... I don't know. But, so I got it working, and it runs faster and better, but still no...
Yeah, it's like next week this time, I'll be running Slackware.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I totally foobarred my Yum. My Yum is just totally effed. I can't update. I can't install anything. So I have to reinstall. I tried uninstalling and reinstalling Yum. It didn't fix it. So I've got to...
How is it messed up? Is the database screwed up?
Okay. I intentionally fucked it up. But it started out as an accident. That's all I'm going to say about it. So, it's beyond repair.
Did you try to change your Yum?
No, I was running an update, and then for some reason, I decided that I wanted to do something different. So I Control-C'd the update, and at the point it was at, it broke all kinds of shit that said you have to manually fix with RPM. Well, I thought I could be smarter than that and tried to fix it with Yum and renamed a bunch of database shit.
Oh, wow.
It's just hosed. Just leave it at that.
So you figured if you're going to be reinstalling...
Going to go ahead and put Slackware on there and see how it goes.
Why not FreeBSD? Paranoid Shell wants you to go with FreeBSD.
No. Thank you, Paranoid Shell, but no. Slackware it is. So.
All right.
Slackware Current, to be exact. So.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line, and that number is 313-626-9140.
And first up from James said, I'll be there. I will try to be there. I really enjoy SMLR. Jim from Guelph, Ontario.
All right.
Or Gulf, Ontario.
Gulf.
Unsure how to pronounce it. It's G-U-E-L-P-H. And then next up we have Rob. Rob says, thanks for another great episode. Sorry if you couldn't read my last email. Oh, he wrote it on his way home from work while driving. Don't do that, Rob. So, we appreciate you as a listener. Don't die. And he is from from Wales, so good on you, Rob.
Yeah.
Next up, we have from Scott Dowdle. Said Matt was his usual jerk self. Well, thank you. Thank you, Scott. I like being called a jerk. It makes my day. And because there really is no reason to do that. I don't care what your reasons are. They're invalid. Joining disparate programs under one window is nuts. Not a good reason, ever. So.
Although he does have a point, though.
He does, but I didn't want to tell him that.
Yeah, well, he has two points.
The one was valid. The one point he made was valid.
Which one is that?
I didn't want to tell him that. It was the...
That you're being a jerk?
Or no, not that I'm being a jerk.
I would say he has two valid points at that point.
For those at task group.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm not a task grouper. I don't use Plasma activities or anything like that. So the the closest I come to task grouping is I have three different browsers I use, and each one is dedicated to a different activity. So Opera, which I have open right now, is dedicated to the show and the show email.
Okay.
Okay. And then I have Firefox, which is dedicated to something else, and then Chrome, which is dedicated to my daily activities.
So you can put all three of your web browsers under one
tab. But I have many tabs open in each browser. That would get too confusing.
So tab your browsers and then tabs in your browsers.
No. So that was a point for people that do use that type of activity switching, but I think calling me a jerk was a little harsh, so thanks, Scott.
I don't know. I think he had a point. You were kind of being a jerk.
I wasn't being a jerk. It's stupid.
No, not saying it's stupid, but the way you went about it, just saying, nope, conversation ended.
Ended. Done. Stupid.
Yeah, well, all right.
That's my personality.
We have UKY Treats. Yuki Treats.
Yeah. Ucky Treats.
Ucky Treats.
I got to talk to Chatter here for a second.
He says the MP3 feed is running, it was only showing up to show 100 for him, and then the AUG feed was showing as a video feed, and we've had that in the past. People have told us that it comes up as a video feed, and I've looked all throughout the feed. I don't know what is causing it to be a video feed. I guess I'll have to check with the plugin manufacturer or the people that make it to see what they say. And then... But as for the reason it's not showing more than 100, I'm not sure why, because I've run it on three different computers and two different other devices, Android devices, and they all show up through, you know, the current release. So the only thing I can think of is maybe there's a problem where it wasn't pulling right. You may want to close it or delete it off your podcatcher and then reinstall it or something, or re-edit.
We do have some information on the IRC, and... Xander says Guelph is how you say it.
Oh.
So he's from Guelph, Ontario, the listener before, that I couldn't pronounce where he was from. So.
All right.
And then we have Claudio Miranda, who said that he's listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review, episode 104. Heard some updates regarding some distro for the Raspberry Pi. I've had some fun lately with Arch for RPM. Port on my recently acquired RevB, and it's running nicely. That said, I thought that Matt Enders and Mary T would be interested in this little gem, and gave us a link to Raspberry Pi. That's FreeBSD. FreeBSD for the Raspberry Pi. So
cool.
Thank you, Claudio. And Mary's right. As a child of parents from Mendoza, Argentina. Oh, that was Claudio that wrote in. From Mendoza, Argentina, who enjoys a good mate now and then. It is pronounced mate. Well, mate to you, mate to me. Have a good day, Claudio.
Tomato, tomato. All right.
And I believe that is all of the listener feedback that I have.
We got one today I've got to read into and see what it's all about. But
the link exchange thing?
Yeah.
So... Now that we had that good 2 minute shot of dead air there.
So today I went and I became a member or whatever of the ACF.
ACF?
Yeah.
What's the...
Anyway, the ACF is the Accessible Computing
Foundation. Oh, the Computing Foundation, yes, with Jonathan Nadeau.
Yeah.
Jonathan Nadeau.
Yeah.
It is, John. So, yes, the Accessible Computing Foundation, good cause. I, on the other hand, renewed my LWN subscription today.
I thought you weren't going to do that.
I did anyway. Yeah. I made it renew itself every month, so now I don't have to think about it. I canceled my Linux Format subscription and went with LWN. I never read the Linux Format
Linux
anyway.
Format, that's the one I thought you were going to cancel.
Yeah, I didn't. I canceled it. I never read it anyway, and it was a dollar more than LWN, so.
All right. You know what's funny? This website, it's the acf.co. It didn't come up right at work. I was using Chrome at work, and when I'm bringing it up here, it's coming up better. It's still coming up kind of strange. But at work, I couldn't even figure out where to click to donate and stuff because this whole sidebar was missing. It was like shoved off to the end, and I couldn't get over to it. But that was on a Ubuntu laptop.
So. That's because you're sighted, and it's meant for a screen reader.
Funny.
Oh, I got real pissed off at this company that I wanted to read this article. It sounded very interesting, so I went to their site, or watch a clip. That was it. Watch a clip. But when I went to their site, it said my Flash player was outdated and needed updated, and it wanted to install their Flash version, and it was a Windows executable and wouldn't let me proceed to the site without installing this Windows executable. So
sounds kind of hinky.
Yeah, so I wrote an infinite bash loop that just downloaded it over and over and over and over and ran it for hours.
Did you really?
Yeah, and it kept it shot into dev null, right into dev null, and then downloaded it again and shot it into dev null. Downloaded it again, shot it into dev null. For hours I ran this last night just to crank their bandwidth, just because they really pissed me off.
Wow.
So, that's what I did last night for fun. Learn a little bit of how to use wget a little better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because wget will retry 20 times, because sometimes they would, I don't know if they had a detector to see what was happening, but sometimes they would see what was happening, and then just all my downloads, they would just ignore them. So I would have to restart it, but then wget retries 20 times by default. So it would keep running on my system for all the tries till it was done, unless I ran a kill all wget. Mm-hmm. I got tired of doing that. So I had to read the wget man page and figure out how to only limit wget to one try, one retry. Or no, just one try period, so that if it fails, it moves on.
Oh, okay.
Because I've got it in an infinite loop, it'll just do it again.
Right.
So, yep.
Interesting.
Yep, and then I always use wget, and it always saved it in the directory I was in, so I also had to read the man page to find out how to shoot it off to another directory, hence the dev null.
Yeah. Was that just add it to the end?
No.
What did you find before out? Oh, was it?
Yeah, yeah. Like the command would be wget dash t and then the number of tries, so I set that to 1. And then it's dash o, I think. I can't remember. It's either dash o or dash c. No. It's dash uppercase p. And then you say dev, whatever the directory you want it to be in. So I said slash dev slash null slash. And then it sent it right to dev null. Yep.
All right.
Every 10 seconds, because there was a magic number. Like, if I did it every 3 seconds, they would see it much faster and just stop downloading to me.
Yeah.
And then every 5 seconds, it would work, but then they would stop downloading it to me, and then after a little while, start again, and then stop, and then start again, and then stop, and then start again. But if I set it to 10 seconds, it just, every time it requested it, it downloaded it.
All right.
So, yep. Sleep 10.
Yeah. So was that a one-liner you put in there, or did you actually?
I actually made a bash script. I started out with it as a one-liner, but then I decided just to script it so that whenever I feel like it, I can just run it.
I feel like screaming again.
Tonight I'm going to run it tonight for a few hours. I'm going to put it on a couple servers at work and have it just run all the time.
You know, they'll probably just ban your IP after a while.
Oh, well.
So on my server, I have one that, you know, my little file server, and it's I have SSH facing the world, so I can remote into it. And so today I decided to install that fail to ban, and I was going through and glancing at the...
We use fail to ban at work.
Yeah. It was just an apt-get, yeah. Fail, the number 2, ban, and... And I went through looking through the config files, and it looked pretty good, like SSH 5 attempts, and then it bans you, and how long, it's like 60, or 600 seconds, yeah. So 10 minutes.
We have ours set to 15.
15 minutes?
15
minutes. Yeah, so I just left it at the defaults, and it looked pretty good. And then I also changed the port, the world-facing port,
yeah,
to a different one.
See, we do that at work, too. We don't run on the standard 22. We run on a obscured port.
Right.
I think that's silly. If they're going to port scan you, they're going to find it. I mean...
Yeah. Well, I guess... Yeah, any hacker that's going to try 22 is also going to try a port
right.
scan.
Right. The first thing I'm doing before I even try to connect to 22 is run a port scan. Yeah. So, it might keep out some script kiddies, but anybody that wants to find out what port you're running SSH on, it's not going to keep them out.
Right.
What's going to keep them out are strong passwords. Right. And fail to ban.
Yeah, and I have both of those set up now. So that's good. Because I was listening to, or the reason I did that is because I was listening to a podcast, Everyday Linux, and the one guy ran, I can't remember which one it was, but he ran just a stock install with SSH turned on. and then put it to the, you know, straight to the world, and to see how many hacking attempts they had.
Oh, you get out, you get hundreds and hundreds an hour. Hundreds. Yeah.
No, he said he had 22,000 within the first day.
Yeah, within the first day. Yeah. Hundreds an hour.
Yeah. So it was a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know, I should probably put something else.
Yeah, I used to get between 600 and 700 an hour on some clients' machines.
Yeah. But they have
attempts at brute force.
They have an actual domain pointing at them too, right?
No.
Just IP address around the world? Wow.
So yeah. Between 600 and 700 an hour I would get.
Yeah. Does failed ban log by default, you know?
I think so. We have logging turned on at work. I don't know if it's by default, but I would assume it logs by default.
Let's get in and see. I think it logs into the whatever it's banning, the connection. So, like, if there's somebody on a web page trying to connect in and it bans them, then it logs to the Apache log, right? Does SSH or authentication have a log? Oh, yeah, the stream dropped off.
The stream died.
I think it's about time to stop, though.
It is.
We're having all sorts of problems tonight. Sorry, guys. All right, so you ready to finish this off?
I am ready.
All right, so you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 105.
It was 105. No, Mary, so sad.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders saying, have a good week. See you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
This was a horrible show. Sorry, everybody. When Mary comes back, then we'll get back to our normal.